cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to the SME's showcase section of our business masterclass. Last week we had the managing director of BDO's subsidiary StatuCor, Larry van der Westhuizen, with us talking about the practical elements of corporate governance in SMEs. This week we're joined by Liesel van Arkel, managing director of World's View Academy. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Richard.
Thanks for being with us. Tell us a little bit about World's View Academy and what you do.
Richard, we specialize in organization development. And if you'll indulge me for a few seconds, mm-hmm. a lot of people don't know what organization development
is. I was going to say in English, that would be.
It's quite a new developing industry in South Africa. It's not a new industry, but in South Africa, it's something that we're not very sure about the definition yet. Many organizations don't have OD departments. Some do, and those who do have different definitions and different functions within those departments. So what we do is we believe that we help organizations become effective in a healthy way. And that's what's so great about OD, is we look at the effectiveness side of the business, the profit margins, the bottom line, the cost, quality, volume, while not forgetting about the healthy side. So the people side, the fluffy stuff, and the organization being healthy to achieve that kind of effectiveness. And in developing the organization, the people is there to develop the organization. So we specialize in developing people to drive the business to effectiveness in a sustainable manner. So a lot of what we do is leadership development, team development. We're registered with the Council for Higher Education. We do skills training. We have a short certificate course. And a new need that's come up for us in the last few years is that there was a big gap in South Africa to train new managers, where these unbelievable technical experts suddenly gets put into a managerial position with this new title, and they've never managed people, and they've always been the people who did the great job, and now they have to get other people to do the great work.
I was going to say, I think for me, as somebody who's been in multiple businesses, I would probably say I've seen more organizational failure from that point and that point alone.
Exactly.
Than virtually everything else put together.
Exactly. And quite often what happens there is the best of the technical experts now become the manager. This poor person has never managed, and suddenly they feel useless. Where they were previously praised for their wonderful work, they're now doing a bad job. And that's where you lose your good people and your leadership pipeline falls flat.
Mm. And then they leave and they go and become a specialist.
Yep.
They go back into the specialist role in your competitor.
Yes.
And then they really give you a run for your money.
Yeah.
And that's normally the challenge. Okay, so give us a little bit of background on Liesel and your journey and where you're an entrepreneur. You've been in the world of business for a number of years. Talk to us a little bit about your background. Just after school, you did.
Well, I certainly didn't leave school thinking I was going to become an entrepreneur and start a bunch of businesses. I had a plan. I was going to become a forensic psychologist.
Ooh. That sounds really funny.
So okay. My first degree was a law degree, second one was psychology. And in that journey, and I do like that you use the word journey, because it is and it has been, I became tired of studying and supporting myself while waitressing and so on. And I decided that struggling to get a scholarship to go and do this qualification that wasn't available in South Africa yet, I started looking around for something interesting to do. I phoned a friend of mine that was in the UK at that point and said, come home, we're starting a business. And we did. And it's a small retail business. And we kind of had no idea what we were doing. But we identified a great need. And I think that's a very important entrepreneurial thing, a need in the market. And next thing, we had 5 shops in Pretoria, and we had all these staff members, and the business was growing, and we were just bumping our heads left, right, and center. You know, the fake it till you make it thing is so, so, so true for me in my life, definitely. That's how I learned. And that's how I actually learned about myself, that I love growing businesses. And I always knew I wanted to work more close with people than in a retail space, so that's how I found the OD world, the organization development work, and I'm now one of those lucky people who do something I absolutely love, and I'm so passionate about it.
So it's always important to be engaged with what you do and to feel that it's part of your DNA as opposed to it's my job. Mm. So that's an interesting one. Now, how long have you been involved with WorldSphere?
For about 5 years.
Okay.
The business started in the 90s as a HR consulting business and then grew into leadership development. Our flagship product is 9 Conversations in Leadership. A lot of people, wherever I go, have heard about that. Mm-hmm. And the business developed from there. There was the leadership development led to team development and then led to the academy being born when we saw another gap in the market where a lot of people have started going into OD or are more interested in OD, or organizations have started OD departments, and there wasn't any qualifications in South Africa except for one other institution. So we decided to start the academy part of the business, and we also decided at that point to make it a practical thing. We didn't want to be another business school. We wanted to make it practical, keep it practical for people to learn the theory around OD, but to practice doing it. So when they walk out tomorrow, when they sit down at their desk or walk into their office, they do something differently.
Now, I just want to quickly draw some parallels here because you're talking about stuff you experience, but I think the lessons that I want to draw out of that is you obviously identified a need in the market of, let me call it, practical doing versus a ton of theory, which is often, you know, we often see, you know, I mean, I get these emails coming all the time, you know, the spam, I guess you could call it, of this course and that course and go here and do this and speak here and attend here. And you look at all of this and you go, well, that's all great, but it doesn't equip me to actually practically do anything. So you've obviously realized that that's a key, let's call it one of the key differentiators, and it's a little bespoke in your business.
Definitely. And we've done quite a bit of research on that within organizations, just asking the question, where do people in your organization, where do leaders and the rest of the organization learn? How do they learn? And the overwhelming response was that the best way to learn was in facilitated conversational context where they do peer learning. So it's the people in the business, it's the exco group or the leadership group or the team that have a conversation and they learn from each other and then taking that into practical application into the workplace. Because being sent away to a business school, and I'm not slagging it, I'm just saying that's what we believe, is you build a leadership within the organization. What does it mean to lead within this bank or this retail company or whatever it is? Instead of learning by yourself and coming back and your mind has been expanded, but nobody understands what's happened to you and there's no support for this. So we believe in doing that sort of training within the organization and then doing action learning assignments on the job.
Yeah, well, I think everybody in the room then is a big believer in a facilitated engagement model, because clearly that's the way of the future. I think the thing that worries me so much, and I mean we're talking here about organization design, is the and I'd maybe put it to you and kind of challenge you to give me some thinking on this, is what is the response that one has when you realize that the world is growing and changing so quickly that your kids and perhaps even you have studied and or are studying for something that you're never actually going to do. And what you're going to do, you can't actually study for because it doesn't exist yet. I mean, how do you handle that in that fast-changing world?
And I just want to add one on there that I heard again this weekend was that kids that are born now will probably never drive a car. If you think about Uber and self-driving cars and why would somebody that is 1 year old now in 18 years be driving a car, you know? Anyway.
So, yeah. I mean, I guess I sit here and I think, okay. But I guess if you'd said to us 18 years ago, you will send a message to somebody without licking a stamp and putting and licking an envelope, we would have said, what are you talking about? And here we have email and messaging. And I mean, I always laugh. I think to myself, we talk of email as a communication method, but reality is it's already old. You know, it's instant chats and it's messaging and this kind of thing. You know, the world has moved to real time everything. So how do you deal with that in an organizational design environment?
Well, the saying that change is constant, we know that it's happening all around us, and more and more. And I think what we try and do is we try and help organizations deal with that change. We try and give them tools to deal with that change. So, for instance, the skills building that we do is a lot around change. Not necessarily change management in the project sense, but the bigger picture of change within an organization. How does it happen? Where does it happen? What does it mean when it happens? Mm. If you want to think about organization design, you can't go to design before you have established your purpose. And that's something we do a lot, is every few years the organization needs to sit down and say, do we still exist for the same reason? And are our clients the same people? And therefore, what should we be great at? And only then can you look at and what design will support that. And definitely work on the people. You know, there's that great quote by Richard Branson that says, train your people so that they are able to leave, but then treat them well enough so that they don't. And we believe in that. So train people to give them the skills to handle the change, and work on your leadership pipeline. In the meantime, the great people that you have that wants to stay there and that can handle the change and that's resilient in that organization, let's develop them and let's give them the tools to be strong enough to handle the change, because that's not going to end.
Yeah, I was going to say that's just the reality of world. It just moves from one space to the next. Now, I mean, you talk about your world and you know the change and the constancy. How do you, and I want to bridge to what we talked about earlier around identifying and retaining high value clients. How do you go about identifying clients in your business? Because this is quite an active market. You know, I guess organizational design and development is not bespoke to you and to you alone. It's not like you have a captive market. You have competitors out there. How do you as a business go about identifying and then attracting and then retaining those high value clients that you want?
And I think those are both very difficult questions for any entrepreneur, any business. For us, we need to have conversations with our clients, because we really believe that we call it issue-centric. So we look at what the business issues in the organization is, and then try and address those from the root. So don't go and intervene on the symptoms of a problem. Look for the underlying reason for that problem. And in order for us to do that, we need to have conversations with our clients. So I think finding them is people who allow us to come and have a meeting, come and have a conversation about your organization and get to know you. And I like what Belinda said previously around the partnership. It becomes a partnership. And quite often, sometimes it's years of conversations before we actually do work in a client. Sometimes it's quick. And then comes the retainment thing. And I think in retaining a client, obviously doing great work, also loved what you were saying about make it easy to do business with us. That's something we think about a lot, because you can imagine the academic side of our business being registered to all the right authorities. It becomes bureaucratic, and you can't allow a student into the class if they haven't filled in certain forms and, you know, ticked certain boxes, but you still want them to just come and enjoy the class. So it becomes difficult sometimes. But I think great work, building those partnerships. An interesting thing about OD is one of the credos of OD is if you're a great OD practitioner, you actually want to work yourself out of work. So we believe in enabling the client. We don't become a pair of hands. We don't believe we're the expert in your business. We believe the wisdom sits in your business, and we come with processes to extract that wisdom so that you can come up with your own strategy, your own design that will serve you best, and then help the leaders to walk the talk. If the leaders don't walk the talk, then there's no use in that. And then through doing that, we believe that we become trusted partners in the organization.
Now, Melinda, you've spoken to us in the earlier slot about this. I mean, what pointers could you give Liesl and her team around how to gain clients and keep those ones that they've got?
I think what came to mind straight away was that whole point around bespoke, about customizing for each of your clients. And I think that for you is almost second nature. I think if you don't and you try to sell the same thing from one client to the next, I don't think that it'll work. I think customization is really important. And then something I spoke about earlier is, you said sometimes it takes many conversations and many years. I think that's where knowing when it's the right time for the customer, knowing that you need to address their challenges. So that whole thing of not necessarily achieving your short-term goals, but achieving their long-term goals and then retaining those customers. Mm-hmm. So putting their needs before yours. That came to mind. And I think that customer service, it always comes back to consistently delivering. So the experience that someone in the classroom has last year must almost be the same as what the new student from the same company has this year. I think that is important, that quality experience that they receive. And those are some of the short-term or some of the quick pointers that come to mind. I also think that developing credibility and trust in your environment would be of paramount importance.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, retaining clients for you, I mean, in reality, to convince people to engage or clients to engage with their teams, because, I mean, effectively, you have a two-tier client environment, and many businesses out there have this, where you've got people that you're delivering services to under the umbrella of a wider organization. And so your client is actually the wider organization, and the participants and the people that you're working with on a day-to-day basis are also your clients. Does that complicate the client retention and the way you deal with the clients? Because I would imagine it can be quite difficult to keep, let me call it, the participants and the client, the main organization, happy. What has been your experience there?
Definitely. Often we work with, there's a specific team in an organization that has a new mandate or a new project team gets started, or, you know, the organization has restructured and there's new teams, and we work with these teams. And it's so difficult to with these 10 or 12 people that you work with, how do you make sure you touch the rest of the organization? And how do you spread the word into the rest of the organization? Sometimes I think it's just point blank asking. If the leader of the team is happy, ask them if there's other teams in the organization that could benefit from what we do. And I believe more and more businesses shouldn't be ashamed to do that.
Asking for the internal reference,
yes,
per se.
Yes.
Okay.
If you have happy customers, why not? That's something that came to mind when we started talking about retention. Quite often we do amazing work in an organization, but in that organization there's so much silo working going on. That you do a lot of work in one business unit or one department, and you don't get to go outside of that because of that work. So the word of mouth doesn't spread far enough. We say that you mushroom into a client. So maybe you do one team development project, or you have a few people on a class. How do you then mushroom into that client? And it's a real challenge.
Melinda, thoughts there?
So what came to mind is alignment. And I think alignment to the organizational strategy. So if you dealing at a departmental level and you're only working on that departmental level, How much of that is aligned to what the organization is trying to achieve? And I think if the organization can see that you're doing great work that could be duplicated throughout the organization, but delivering to what they ultimately want to achieve, I think for me, alignment would be really important. And I do think it's exactly as you said earlier, getting those internal references, and you find one ambassador to drive your business for you, and it's about that relationship and partnering. So they know that this person or this organization's delivered for us. Look at what they've able to achieve. How do we then recreate that throughout the organization?
And at the end of the day, the ability to move across the organization is, I guess, ultimately for you, part of the fundamental delivery that you have, because it doesn't help having one part of the organization on one, let's call it in one movie. I always use the analogy, it's like you've got different movies playing inside the organization. I kind of go, you know, like, hold on, we want to get everybody into the same movie theater and watching the same version of the movie. Sometimes I wonder if they're in different movie houses completely, you know, in different shopping centers sometimes. But you want to get everybody on the same, you know, we're watching the same scene, we're watching the same input, and we understand the organizational issues cohesively. And often, you know, some people are watching the start of the movie, and some people are already halfway through, and others are at the punchline, you know, and you kind of wonder, like, how are we going to get this all to align and engage? So that's critical. Now, I mean, what has been your biggest challenge in your business to date? What's been the one thing that you kind of go, hey, that's been a real challenge for you as a business owner, as an entrepreneur in South Africa? What have been some of the, you have our highs and we have our lows. Share some of the highs, some of the lows, some of the successes, some of the learnings.
I think one of the biggest things for us in World's View is we grew quite quickly. We were a certain size for a long time, and suddenly we grew. It was this explosion. And with that became things became complicated. There was bureaucracy. You couldn't walk into the office and say, so-and-so phoned, can somebody quickly quote them, blah, blah, blah. You know, it was like everything.
Oh, for those days.
Yeah. And everything had to go through this red tape and this long process. And we just realized, you know what, we can't be that type of company because that's not who we want to be. We need to go back to being entrepreneurial and to having small business mentality because I think personally that is what makes us different as well, because it's that intense caring for your client. If you do a team development session with a client, I did one at the end of December, and the team walked into the room not really knowing each other, and there was a lot of conflict, and people were starting to look for other positions. And by the end of the 2 days, I had people going, we walked in as strangers, and we are now family, and we get each other. And it was just so beautiful to see that, you know, even the facilitator sometimes gets tears in their eyes. So we decided we needed to get back to that small business mentality and make it simple. And that's not easy. It's not easy. But if it works, it works. And in that is a practice what we preach thing for World's View, definitely, is get a team together and make that team stick together for at least a while. And that's the one thing that we got right. For a year and a half now, we haven't lost a single person in our organization.
Wow.
I know.
That's incredible. Know. That is incredible. Okay. That's an achievement.
Yeah.
I think the one thing that always strikes me as entrepreneurs, we sometimes don't realize the cost of churn.
Exactly.
on our people and on our organization. So that's a remarkable achievement, if I may say.
And that's why we say spend on your people, invest in your people. You know, one of the big buzzwords at the moment, and I don't mean it that it's bad, it's a good buzzword, is the EVP, the employee value proposition. How do you get people to want to come and work in your organization, and then once they're there, how do you get them to stay? So there's the millennium thing where people don't, and there's a new thinking around create a revolving door policy. So stay, learn, go somewhere else, learn, come back. which is a different way of thinking, isn't it? Okay. I mean, we all grew up with you stick, and if you quit, that's bad. And people are going to be angry at you that you left the organization.
Yeah, that's I've never thought about the revolving door approach. Sure, that's an interesting one. It's even challenging my thinking here for a moment.
I was going to say, I quite like that. I think it talks to dealing with the challenges that we have with the new thinking of the world of work. So absolutely. One thing that came to mind is when you were talking about getting back to the basics, and isn't that what your customers bought from you in the first place?
Exactly. Exactly. And what they fell in love with.
Exactly. And that personal touch. And if you don't give them that personal touch, they're going to go somewhere else. So you almost don't have a choice but to go back to the basics and deliver with an entrepreneurial spirit, because that's what they bought in the first place. And isn't that what your brand's about?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Now, I mean, if I was to say to you, what is the, I mean, and I think we all have these moments, you may have had these, where you think, wow, if I knew then what I know now, I would have made some very different decisions or done things differently. Now, I guess my challenge to you is, there are people listening today that are right at the start of their journey that you've traveled down the road on. What few insights can you give somebody that you think to yourself, wow, if I had been listening to a radio show, you know, 15 years ago, I wish somebody had shared this nugget of information with me, because I then wouldn't have made that bad call or had to live through that difficult time in my life. To just help, I call it the pay it forward question. What are your thoughts there?
I think the biggest lesson for me was the balance between working on your business and working in your business. And for an entrepreneur and a business owner, it is so difficult. If you start a business, one-man show from the beginning, or two-man show, whatever, you have to work in that business. You are the everything to that business. You are the one who does the hard work, the groundwork, the customer-facing work, the behind-the-scenes work, the books over weekends, everything. You do all of that. But at some point, there needs to be a balance where you're also working on your business, because you are also the person who needs to think about, how do I make this business bigger, greater, better, and spend time on that, not just thinking, but actually doing that. And I've definitely bumped my head a few times where you get so busy in the business that the business then goes through a slump, because you haven't been working on expanding the business, building the business, getting new clients, even like you said before, Belinda, working on that client relationship so that they come back to you, so that they want to recommend you and tell people about you. You still need to have the time to go and meet up for a coffee or phone and say, how's it going? You know.
Well, so, I mean, somebody that I worked with extensively many years ago once said to me, he said, a cup of coffee costs you just that, but relationships endure forever. And I thought to myself, wow, that's quite powerful. And he made a point of, you know, saying to people, you know, can I come and do coffee with you? And let's just talk about what we're busy with. And I look at what I do as an entrepreneur and what we all do as entrepreneurs, and I think, you know, do we actually take the time to sit back? So I think that's a very sage piece of advice, is to make sure that you're working on your business, that you're building your own networks and your value propositions about your business, not inside your business per se.
But
and also that you invest time in yourself. Having just come out of the holiday season, I mean, I think we can all probably relate to this, but I'm not sure that my phone was ever off on any day. I don't know about yours, but
nope.
Yeah. And I, you know, I think to myself, I remember stories of my grandfather that my mom told, where that, you know, there was a number in town that was the emergency number. And if his employer needed to get hold of him, they would have to leave a message there. And every 2 days or 3 days, they would drive 5 Ks into town and go and fetch and check if there were any messages and if everything was okay. And they were on holiday for a month every year over December. And I think to myself, wow, has the world changed? If you don't answer your phone on the 23rd of December at 5:30, by quarter to six, you've got a snotty email from somebody.
Yep.
And you think to yourself, How does this work? You know, so the world has moved. Yeah. So taking time for yourself to invest in yourself is definitely also an important...
Look after yourself. I don't believe there's any small business that can survive with the startup entrepreneur not working more than 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. I think it's more like 12 to 14 hours a day, six, 7 days a week. Mm. And if you enjoy it and you're passionate about it, that's good. You can put some hobbies on the side for a little while. But look after yourself.
Mm. Yeah, invest in your in your health and in your family and those that you care for.
And things that make you happy.
Yeah, it's very important to be happy. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Just in terms of contact details, if people want to chat to you, Liesl, how do they get hold of you?
Sure. Our email address is info@worldsviewacademy.com.
Okay.
Our website, worldsviewacademy.com, and then a landline number, 011-844-1110.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
So our guest, Liesl van Arkel, Managing Director of Worldsview Academy, thank you very much for being with us. Belinda Wagner, thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate your insights. Next up, the Youth Leadership Platform. CliffCentral.com.